When you're starting a brand, we believe that they are extensions of the founding team. And if they're not in the early days, they won't take off.
I'm your host, Dave Knox, and this is Predicting the Turn, a show that helps business leaders meet their industry's inevitable disruption head on.
Welcome to another episode of Predicting the Turn. Today, we sit down with the folks at Good Wipes to learn about their journey and how they're approaching building this amazing brand. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Dave, good morning, and thank you for having me. How are you doing?
Hey, doing great and looking forward to the conversation.
Likewise.
So I want to start off with the basics. What is Good Wipes, and how did you guys end up starting the business?
Yeah, great. I think Good Wipes, like most of our favorite brands, has started out of a need state. My co-founder has... Sam Niebel has IBS. I have sensitive skin. And we both grew up in households where we learned very early on that dry, scratchy toilet paper just didn't get the job done and left a lot to be desired. I think growing up, Sam and I both thought it was a bizarre hygiene routine. But when we crashed into each other in college, literally walking in and out of a big communal bathroom, bumping shoulders, looking down, both holding bags of wet wipes, we recognized that other people did this too. And you say in that moment, we bonded over wet wipes. And the 30 days that followed that moment were actually pretty interesting. We were living in a large house and we went on this crusade and tried to convince everyone to start wiping wet. And we learned a couple things early on in this journey. It was number one, when people tried wiping wet for the first time, 7 out of 10 people, they stayed with it and they didn't go back to dry toilet paper. We recognized that once people adopted wet wipes into their hygiene routines, they didn't know where to buy them. And when they found wipes in stores, they were convinced they weren't for them and they were embarrassed to buy them. Then as we kept pressing in, we learned that most wipes weren't flushable and that a lot of them actually had really bad ingredients in them. We took a swing at Good Wipes 12 years ago now at this point. And Good Wipes are a premium, actually flushable wipes for adults that are truly flushable, proving a confident clean for everybody that uses them.
So I want to talk about the category. Toilet paper is overall, it's always been a commodity type business.
Yeah.
You guys have taken a really different approach though, thinking about beauty, lifestyle, and how do you bring some character to this? What led you down that path and what have you learned along the way?
Yeah, great. Sam and I, we love retail. We like shopping. And if you're walking down the aisles of a Target or a Walmart, or your favorite supermarket, the stores kind of bifurcate. You have these areas and these sections that are really fragrant and fun to shop, personal care, beauty. And then we have this other side of the store, like household care and paper, and it's really dry, stale, and stagnant. And we thought, wouldn't it be cool? You have this paper category that 97% of US households shop. Wouldn't it be cool if it was just as shoppable as the other parts of the store? So we always say we have this intention to bring the brilliant codes of the beauty category over into the dry paper category. And it's just the human connection that we're looking for, this idea of really turning something that has always been considered a commodity and building a culture and a community around it.
So when you think about that kind of branding, you've also learned a ton of lessons on just building a business, where you guys started, how you sourced that first manufacturer, how you talked to a retailer. You know, looking back, what are those things you wish you had known 7, 8 years ago in your journey?
Oh, good. I think we have done all right because product was really important to us in the beginning. Because it came out of a need state, we were solving a problem. And we could get on here and talk really high-level marketing jargon and sound really slick. But I think this thing worked from the beginning because I believe we have the best product in the category. So you got to start with having a great product. And then for us, it was really about just being authentic to who we are. We had no playbook. We just knew that we saw a little bit of white space in the market and our friends and the people around us were craving something different. And so we just started serving that need in a very unadulterated, authentic way, and started and continued to listen to the community and the folks around us along the way. And you learn things. I think from a brand building perspective, I wish we double clicked and invested in people faster. We have a lot of our growth the past couple of years has come from a lot of the insights, the tenure, and the direction that the brilliant people that have joined our team. And if we could do it again, I think we'd hire talent faster.
Let's talk about that brand building a little bit. Sure. Recently, you guys came out with the Porta Palace, which has been gaining a ton of buzz.
Yeah.
What is that? And why did you guys decide to launch that?
Porta Palace is world's greatest porta potty. It's a luxury porta potty on wheels. And when you think about growing an emerging brand, I think one of the great pillars is driving trial. And we've all walked into your local grocery store or Whole Foods or Costco. And as you're walking in, you're getting sampled. A lot of beverage companies and a lot of snack bars, you're getting samples of food and treats. And it's always like really pleasant. But as you can imagine, as kind of like this below the belt beauty brand, we don't have the opportunity to do that. We're never going to give somebody a wipe and go into the bathroom with them. We decided to bring the bathroom to them. And we started double clicking on where our consumers work, live, and played, and really sharpen the pencil on where our folks are playing. And we tried to find a use case intersection consumers that are in a high emotional state fit to have a really like sticky brand interaction with our folks. And I think it's worked so far. When we think of where we want to place this luxury Porta Palace to drive trial and inspire people just to be immersed in the brand, it's, we do a lot of marathons and races. We do a lot of concerts and a lot of community events. And you've been there, I've been there. There's all, no matter what level of entry you have, if you're a general admission or you're VIP, if you're in a public environment where there's porta potties, the restroom experience is always horrific. So we wanted to bring an experience that brought a little bit of comfort and just an elevated routine.
Digging in on that a little bit more, event marketing is a thing that a lot of people want to invest in, but it's tough to figure out what's that ROI, and just being Instagrammable isn't enough. How have you guys thought about really justifying this investment and seeing what it does to building the business?
Hard question. It's a funny question. We talk about this with almost everyone that is activating at each event that we're at. And I think everyone has a different take on it. There's seasons where we want to really be able to quantify everything that we do. And the longer that you stay in the fight, I think the easier that is to do. And Sam and our team, we look at activation and trial as a necessity. And we say oftentimes around here, you have to trust the soup, right? You're putting all these ingredients in a pot and you're stirring it, you're changing the temperature and you're taking it off the stove. And along the way, it doesn't look great, but there's a recipe and you have these ingredients that you're cooking together. We have to trust that you're doing the right things along the way. So I think oftentimes activation feels a lot like your mid recipe. But it's been really cool because we're probably 8 months into launching the Porta Palace, and in parallel with other activities, our category share is up 2.5 pure points. We don't do a ton. Our DTC business is a very small portion of our business, but our website traffic is up over 35%. Organic social impressions, which we think is the number one indicator of kind of your awareness and your fame groundswell, is up over 100%. Year to date. These are all things that we believe are indicating and are lead indicators of these type of activations working for the brand.
Talent is a big part of predicting the turn. And as we talk about talent, I wanted to mention one of our sponsors, Hunt Club. Imagine the power of the best marketers in the world helping you to find your next marketing leader. That's the power of Hunt Club. Hunt Club is a new category of talent company that powers the network of experts, connectors, and business leaders to help you find the best talent. Let's face it, recruiting hasn't changed with the times. Hunt Club is changing the recruiting game by leveraging technology and crowdsourced referrals to find you the best people possible for your company. Stop paying job boards that don't work or recruiting firms that recycle the same active candidates. Partner with Hunt Club.
When you think about the category, it's one that has, let's call it, relatively been safe in its marketing approach and the brand messaging. You guys have really tried to push the envelope. How did you decide to do that? And how do you know where that line is that goes from being appropriate to crass overall?
Good. We don't know where the line is. We talk about it daily. Let's see. We when you're starting a brand, we believe that they are extensions of the founding team. And if they're not in the early days, they won't take off. And so going back to us not having a playbook and just trial and error, all we knew how to do was to be ourselves and to treat our community like we do our friends. We understand we're in a consumer democracy. We understand that our business is here to serve, add value, and solve a problem. But the way that we marketed the brand and we talked about the product and we talked to people like they were people and as if the brand were also a person, I think it made it really approachable. And a big lens that we had early on was this is, for whatever reason, below the belt hygiene is a taboo topic and people weren't talking about it, but there was so much to be desired in this area of our hygiene routine. And it's something that everybody exercises. So we just started talking like we were with our closest friends and started learning that people would find reprieves and they understood and aligned that when you invest in yourself and you look good and you feel good and you play good, you live a better life. And so that was a lot of the ethos, was just staying true to investing in ourselves and talking to the folks that were rallying around the brand like they were our friends.
Speaking about talking to your consumers, a lot of brands that have been born over the last decade start as D2C businesses, get to a certain scale, and then they think about expanding. Sure. You guys have really balanced since day one, the D2C world, the retail world, the Amazon world. How do you think about where each of those channels play and fit really in your brand building ethos?
Cool. Yeah. D2C, Sam, I didn't have a ton of exposure to that in college. It wasn't, I think, part of the country that we were in. It wasn't a really hot topic. So it wasn't something that we were super keen on. We've always looked at D2C as a brand hub. Also, the economics on that channel for pretty much paper that's soaked in water it's pretty tough. So we want to build a sustainable business, and the economics didn't really look strong for D2C, and we weren't great at it. So D2C has always been a brand hub, right? If you interact with a brand or you hear somebody talk about it, you're going to the website or you're going to the Instagram or social channel and you're getting more of the flavoring to understand it. Amazon, we've always looked at as an activation and discovery and a trial platform. It's super, people are searching for what they need, and you're able to get in front of somebody that is desiring a solution to a problem that they have with relative ease. Economics on that platform are much better for us, and it's been a huge lever in how we've grown the business and also listened to consumers, right? We've always, any product iterations that we've made, we've historically received that feedback from reviews on Amazon. And then a lot of our retail business was won by proving what we were doing on the digital shelf against our competitors on Amazon and saying and believing and showing how we can do the same thing in a retail environment. And retail is still very shoppable, very discoverable, but we are on the shopping list from a retail perspective. That's what we look at. A lot of discovery on Amazon and your everyday shopping list or hit list from a retail lens.
You talked about in the early days when you and Sam were starting this business that you were on this mission, convert people from dry to wet.
Yeah.
When you think about that today, how do you think about that same conversion from first-time users into lifelong fans?
Marketing is really easy to complicate. And I think we get away from the basics. And I do want to double click. When we talk about marketing, for us, it's only possible because of people and team. So none of this, anything that we say, wouldn't be possible in the absence of the folks that are helping build this thing. But I think product, man, if you got to have retention, you got to have loyalty, you need to have sneezers and heavy users to grow the brand. I don't think you can ever do it on your own. Over the course of the past decade, which many people would argue is like the golden era of CPG, we've seen so many brands come and go because they were pumping and dumping dollars for consumers. And without the retention and the loyalty, the brands, they fizzle out. So yeah, I think starting with product, driving trial, and continuing to meet people where they're at to keep the brand top of mind, to keep them in the fold of the company.
When you think about your expansion as a business, you've got different categories you can go into along the way. You have different sense, et cetera. How do you think about product innovation for the business these days?
I love it. The category has just north of 33% household penetration. So when we think of innovation, we think more of innovation, how we're talking, how we're educating, and how we're bringing light to our the subcategory of paper. I think it's really easy to get sidetracked and thinking, oh, you have a consumer base, let's platform this brand. But then when you look at the brand's penetration, when you look at the category's penetration and the total addressable market, there's work to do. So I think for the next, at least in 3 to 5 years, we're hyper-focused on bringing new households into the fold. Along the way, I think you'll see a lot of iteration from a price tag architecture standpoint. We do, I think, flavors and, or we call them flavors, but scents that really give people an opportunity to express their individuality, paired with functional ingredients, is where I think you're going to see a lot of innovation in the short term and in the long range. I think just like any category that gets a lot of attention, sustainability starts becoming more of a conversation. And I think ease of use and integration into current lifestyle. And so there's some things on the back end that we're working on that I think will probably north of the 3 and 5 year mark, but 1 to 3, a lot of flavor, a lot of pack size, solely focused on educating consumers and households. And I think when we think of education, there's a lot of misnomers that their flushable wipes aren't flushable, and they are. There's literally forensic studies that prove this. And so I think we have a lot of education as a category to do there. And then I think we talk about shoppability, and we want to bring this beauty codes over into our category, but there's also this kind of psychological barrier difference that we're standing up against as well. And it's when you're in the beauty and you're in the personal care category, you're in a shopper mindset. You want to see what's out there. You're looking for a new way to do the job. But when you're shopping household and when you're shopping paper, you're not really thinking like that. There's a lot of habit that you're stepping into. Oh, I grab this roll of toilet paper. I grab this box of wipes. And I think a big driver there is people aren't talking about the job that we're doing, and they're not believing that toilet paper is not getting the job done. So when we think about education, it's about flushability and it's about cleanliness. We have clinical studies that show that improve that toilet paper leaves something behind, and you can experience a confident and a cleaner clean with good wipes.
Earlier, you mentioned the lessons you've learned that you wish you'd known when you started the business. You also spend a lot of time as a mentor, helping founders that are at the journey you were called a decade ago. What advice do you give to a founder that is trying to build a business today?
Yeah. You got to know where you're going and why. And you got to, that's your gospel. You got to focus on that and continue to remind yourself where you're going and why, and eradicate yourself of what we call waggy tail syndrome. There's gonna be a lot of white picket fences and pink lemonade offered along the way, but you got to stay true to who you are and get the job done. I think more than anything, you got to stay in the fight. I'm a big believer that most people can do most things, and most people can win if they don't give up and if they stay in the fight. And so it takes, everyone hears this, and I remember specifically the last time I heard it. These things, they take 3 times as long as you want them to, and they cost 3 times as much money. I call it the stove syndrome. Like, we gotta, for some reason, even though we hear these things over and over again, we have to experience it ourselves to believe it. We have to put our hand on the stove to believe that it's actually hot. We have to experience that these things take longer. We have to experience that these things cost a lot more than you anticipate, but it'll take longer. It'll cost more. And that's okay. I think the sooner and the earlier you can believe and know that, it makes the endurance and the perseverance part of it a lot easier.
That's perfect. I can't think of a better place to end the conversation. So I appreciate you sharing more about the journey you've had with Good Wipes and the amazing brand that you, Charlie, Sam, and the rest of the team you brought along the way have built over the last few years.
Yeah, it's awesome. Hey, Dave, gift and a pleasure this morning. A lot of fun. I hope you have a great one.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like the show, hit that rating and make sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And for more resources, head over to predictingtheturn.com.